Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to American Statesman Blog Talk Radio, the place where it's all about duty, honor, and country, the place where we are one nation under God. Today is Tuesday, July 9th, 2013. My name is Sally Bathurst, and thank you for tuning in to American Freedom Watch Radio tonight. Excuse me. Karen Schoen and John Estabrook will be your host. And they have a special guest tonight, Michael Shaw. He'll be joining us later. Two things I got to say real quick before I hand it over to Karen and John. One, congratulations, Karen.
Thank you, Sally.
And for those who don't know what we're talking about, Karen has decided to run for office because it's the right thing to do. We need her out there, so yes, thank you so much. And at one point, I will have you as a guest on one of my shows to tell us all about your campaign and why you chose to do this.
Thank you.
Really, thank you, because I run for office myself once, so I know what it's like, and we need more good people. And we've got to stop letting these people run unopposed, which is what you have seen a lot of out there.
Yes.
The other thing here I wanted to mention, you know, the amnesty deal is getting tighter and tighter and more heated, and these Republicans are all trying to play a political game instead of just doing what's right for the country. If they do what's right for the country, they're going to win, but they don't seem to understand that part. But something I just saw this past week, I haven't seen the whole video, but I've seen clips of it, and I've seen Dennis Michael Lynch. I have seen him on several different shows.
Yes.
And I have ordered the DVDs myself.
Right.
People need to go to theycometoamerica.com, and then the video is They Come to America, The True Cost of Amnesty. What I saw, you know, the Chinese nationals that are coming over, the border security issue, forget the Mexican workers, you know, the illegal workers that are coming in. And we've always talked about the security, but here he's really got, he has got so much information on that. It was really interesting. And if these people will still vote for amnesty after what this guy is showing us out there, then we really, truly, we need a lot more of you, Karen, in there now. Kind of thing. So it was just terrible. And I ask everybody out there listening, call John Boehner's. He's a speaker, so you have the right to call his office. You have the right to call any of them, but they'll say you're not their constituent. He's the Speaker of the House. Call him at 202-225-0600. Let's melt down his phone line and say, do nothing. Do nothing. No immigration until after the 2014. And it's not secure the border. But don't even do that, because then they'll try to commingle the two different bills and we'll still have amnesty out there. So the right thing for them to do is to do nothing. And
yep,
I got to get
you
that.
You are so right.
Well, do nothing or implement the laws we already got on the books. I mean, that's
right.
The greatest hope for anyone is that they would just, if they would exercise the laws that we have on the books and start to round these people up. I mean, they're criminals. They are here illegally. You know, I'm not going to call them anything but what they are. They're illegal immigrants. They have come here illegally, and we have laws on the books that will send them home. Let's do that.
Totally. And, you know, the other thing, when they talk about the border security, that's another one. Just enforce the current laws. You've already got the
Absolutely.
Law to build a fence. You don't need another bill.
That's right.
So anyway.
We've got plenty of soldiers that are coming back and they're displaced right now that would love to stay in the military. And I think as long as we're financing billions of dollars for all other, foreign aid, well, we could certainly finance and put about 30,000 soldiers along the border. And we have the soldiers available. We've got great Americans that have served us well in Afghanistan and Iraq and have done their duty and are still willing to, but they're being released. And, you know, hey, let's step up and let's use some common sense. Let's load the border with our soldiers, American soldiers, and let's enforce the laws that we have.
Exactly. And Dennis Michael Lynch, he actually says the first thing he would do was take our National Guard and get them down on that border.
Yes, ma'am.
That is the best solution. That is the absolute best solution.
Yeah, so anyway, it was interesting, and I had to get my rant out there before I handed it over.
That's okay.
That was for the right
reason. It's always a pleasure, and you're always welcome. Folks, this is Karen Schoen and John Estabrooks, and this is American Freedom Watch Radio. We are brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on RedStateTalkRadio.com. Please join us. Tell your friends. Participate. This is what America is about, people working together for America, for Americans. And I refuse now to call them the American people, because that puts us in a lump and group, and we are individuals, so we are all Americans, period. John, as Sally was saying, I decided on Friday to run for office, and I want to tell you what I did. I switched.
Okay.
I moved out of the Republican Party, and the reason why I did that was two reasons, folks. First of all, I believe that both parties are run by the same people, so what difference would it make? And secondly, I was told by someone in the Republican Party when I said we need to replace the person who's in office, she's termed out, we have to get a good conservative. You know what they said to me, John? Oh, don't worry, Brad Drake was already selected. Already selected? I said, wait a minute, what happened to the primary? What happened to a general election? How would you select him? And they said, oh, well, we've already made our choice. Well, you've made your choice, but what about the millions of people living in Florida? And what about the hundreds of thousands of people living in that district who will have no choice? So I was told, oh, well, the way that it works, Karen, is that nobody will run against Brad because all of the money from the Republican Party is going to go to Brad. So I thought for a minute, and I said, oh, wrong answer. Sorry, you lost me.
Yeah.
I'm leaving.
But now, Karen, I mean, they're giving you the inside information, and that's what Americans, I mean, we have to recognize that the two-party system that we have has given us the government that we have today. So, number one, they have failed, and they are failing us miserably. But then the inside track that the RNC and the DNC uses inside of every state, it's not any different in Louisiana or any state in the union. That's the way they conduct their business. They find a guy that's willing to go along with their platform as it exists, and if it's a progressive platform, well, then he is given the nod or she is given the nod, and then they throw their money behind that candidate and that candidate alone. So there is no voice of we the people. So
exactly.
They isolate, and that's exactly what their intent is, and then they hope to dissuade you and say, well, you're not going to be able to get any money. Well, that's a lie. That's not true, because we can work precincts. You go door to door, and trust me, there are people that are willing to support a conservative candidate.
Well, that's exactly what I thought, John, and I said, you know what? My goal is going to be to spend as little money as possible and to make him spend as much money as possible.
Absolutely.
I think this is going to be very interesting. He's a very nice guy. Don't get me wrong. He's a nice guy, but he's a party guy, and independent thought is what is necessary and needed. And from his record and from his voting record, he votes party line. He has no independent thought, hasn't done really much of anything, and to me was a big disappointment. Would have been the last person in the world I would have selected for my district. So when I was told that, I said, okay, I cannot see anybody in any district. And that's something very important, folks. Look in your districts and see who's termed out and see who's running against other people. And if there's nobody running, the worst thing in the world that we can do is let people go unopposed. And then we complain about them. So I believe in solutions. If you can't be part of the solution, then you're part of the problem. And I don't want to be part of the problem anymore. So that was my decision. And I am hoping that there will be many, many other patriots who will come to the same decision and conclusion as well. Because in order to save our country, we've got to do things differently. We can't be doing the same old, same old. Just like Sally said, John Michael Lynch, I don't know if you've seen that film. It's called They Come to America 2. He goes on the border, John. He is right on the border. And he's showing in this film signs written in English, Spanish, in Chinese. Now,
yeah.
I don't know any marketing company that would put up signs in a language that people wouldn't read. So that, to me, says there are Chinese coming across this border.
Absolutely, Karen.
And
in large numbers, I mean, and it's by design, and that's what we have to recognize. This legislation that the Gang of Eight has proposed is a farce. It will lead us to nowhere. It will break the economy, put such a burden on the economy that we can't stand it. I mean, you know, we're already seeing the failures of Obamacare, and we're seeing a president now that wants to operate outside of the Constitution of the United States and has passed a health care legislation and passed a law, and now he's saying, oh, well, you know, I've recognized that if we do this, it's going to create such a strain on the economy that it's not affordable and we can't pay for it, so we're going to wait and we're going to put this part of it on the shelf for a year. That is not his right. The executive branch, once a law is put on the books and signed, and he signed it, it is not his right to do that. It is up to the Congress. And we've got a president and an executive branch that's diverting to Congress. And it's the same thing. This Gang of Eight solution is no solution whatsoever. I will not accept anything that does not enforce the border security today. Today, the laws are on the books to do that. We don't need anything, no new dresses put on it. Let's enforce the laws that we have on the books, folks.
Yep. And you know what? We have some really great laws on the books. And the problem is nobody pays attention to them and nobody reads them. And then they go more and more laws.
Yeah. It's not putting money in their pockets, Karen. Anything that's worked, and, you know, when we have laws like that, we have to look at, well, who's going to benefit from this legislation, and who is it going to benefit? Well, guess what it benefits? It benefits big government. It does not benefit the people. The people are being lied to that this is the solution. It is no solution. It is another cost buster on the American taxpayer. And we can't allow it to go further. And like Sally said, we need to contact Speaker Boehner. And then our own local, our congressman in the district that you live in, contact your congressman and tell them we have to turn this back and not to make any kind of agreements with the Senate bill.
Absolutely, because I am afraid, as I'm sure you are, John, that if any bill is offered, it'll go to the Senate. They'll make a change. They'll do whatever. Dirty Harry won't let anybody look at it, but he'll say vote on it. Then they'll go and vote on it without realizing anything of what is in it. And all of a sudden, we'll have a bill that nobody even read, nobody saw, nobody knows what's in it, and it's going to be signed by Obama, and all of a sudden, and then we'll have 30 million people. And you know what else bothers me, John? When I heard, I can't remember what senator it was, saying that, it was one of my own senators. I think it was Steve Sutherland. It wasn't a senator. It was a congressman. That they increased the H-1B visas because they can't find jobs for technical people. They have to import technicians from other countries. Do you know what a big lie that is? That is the absolute biggest lie ever. With 300 million people, they can't find jobs that are high-paying jobs that Americans can do. Do you know how smelly that is? That is so smelly and disgusting. And the reason why I'm saying that is because I want everybody to think about this. Who is going to come over? They're going to take and bring over intelligent people. That's not a problem. We want intelligent people in America. But these people are also socialists. They're coming from socialist countries. And as a result of that, we are not increasing anything that has to do with America because we don't teach America in our schools. We don't even teach math and science and the things that would get people jobs. So we don't teach them, and then we turn around and say, oh, Americans are too stupid and we need more people to come here and so we can give them jobs. If we would go back and look at the schools and actually teach lessons that actually make sense, then we might have students that can read and write and do math and do higher mathematics and technical programs and engineering and the science that are needed by these businesses. So this whole thing is an absolute lie. I cannot believe that our kids are graduating college and carrying that huge burden of debt only so that they're not going to have a job because they're too dumb. That does not compute. That does not make sense at all. But that's what we're being told.
Isn't that the way of politics and the failure of these two parties, Karen, is they have destroyed the free market economy. That is a fact. I mean, there's no denying that. They have done everything in their power, used every type of federal agency that we can name to destroy the free market economy. They have destroyed the public education system in America. They have been dumbing down our children since 1965. And now that they've created the problem, they offer us a foreign solution to the problem. And you and I know exactly what that is about. That is the design of the United Nations, the global governance design, is to mash us and to meld us all into a great melding pot of a global society that will ultimately end up being controlled by the United Nations. And that is, they've created the problem, and then they offer a failed solution. So that is not a solution. The solution is when you've got the number of unemployed Americans in this country, the number of college graduates that are without jobs, if you can't bring them into the workforce and have private industry that needs technicians, bring them on and train them, that's a lie. It is being done in every other nation around the planet. Why is it that it can't be done here in America? These companies that are buying into this and allowing a congressman to spew that lie, they are partners in the crime that's being perpetrated against us.
Yes, you are. That is exactly right. That is exactly what they are doing. And that is exactly where they are going. And they are perpetrating this lie and more lies. You know, yesterday I wrote a very sarcastic piece because I was in that kind of a mood. I would never do that. No. Anyway, but what I was thinking of, John, and you probably would get a kick out of this also. Here we have Obama telling Americans that we cannot use fossil fuel. And we cannot use coal because it will create greenhouse gas and Americans will pollute the planet with those dirty gases and all of the CO2 atrocities will pollute the planet, CO2 poison, so we have to stop. And then he goes to Africa and he says, we're going to give you $7 billion for you to develop coal and oil and green solutions. So...
absolutely.
What does that mean? He wants the African coal.
Well, I mean, they're shopping American coal, Karen. I mean, that's the one thing that I know is that, okay, you've got the federal government who has declined the coal production and the use of coal and the leasing of lands that contain coal on federal property by 9% over this president's administration, and it continues. I mean, it's a moratorium. They're not going to call it what it is. But when they don't make lands available for coal miners, and then they continue to cut down and shut down coal-fired plants through EPA lies and misnomers. I said last night, and I watched Gasland 2 about fracking, and what a lie being perpetrated and allowed to even be put. I'm astounded that the people that produced and put that garbage out have not been held to task, because when we've held them to task, they cannot prove that fracking has ever done anything to the groundwater. It is a lie being perpetrated on the American people by idiots, and anyone that believes anything that they've produced in that film is a fool. I mean, the technology, we've been fracking for 60 years. I know
John,
that because that's
John, it's a brand new technology that nobody knew about before. And that's why we've got to regulate it, because it's brand new. So we can't do it here because we're going to poison ourselves but they can do it in Africa and they're not going to poison themselves?
How does that make sense? In China. China's burning
and
more
China,
coal
yeah,
than they ever have.
You know what? John, I got it. They must be our enemy, so he's going to poison them by giving them our money and letting them create cheap energy so that they'll poison themselves with CO2. He's going to protect
them with CO2. If I put the coal miners in such a bind and a crisis to where they can't sell their product locally, and I force them to sell it at a cheaper price to communists, well, then I'm being a good executive. Well, now, folks, I mean, you have to make your own mind up. I mean, look at the logic, and it's simple logic. And it is, in a free market economy, where you allow the coal producers and the coal-fired energy plants to continue to operate, because these plants meet the EPA guidelines that were put on the book 15 years ago. They passed all of those requirements as clean-burning coal facilities. And then now you get a new EPA under Lisa Jackson and this president, and they start closing them down because they increase the standards that these companies can't meet unless they go in and retrofit once more, and it's not cost-effective. So they go ahead and they close
them. That was a key question. If they go and retrofit, is it cost effective to do that? And from what you're saying, no.
No, ma'am, it's not, because the payback to do it is a 25-year span. And would you do it if you did it 15 years ago and they said, okay, you've got to meet these standards, and then you go ahead and you do that, you meet those standards that are put on the book by the EPA then, and the EPA tells you, just meet these standards, you do that, and before you can even get that retrofit paid for, they tell you, well, wait a while, we're going to have to implement harsher standards because we've decided that this is happening to the fumes and the CO2 emissions that are coming from your facility are going to have to meet a tighter standard. They've not paid for the last retrofit, and you're going to ask them to do it again, and then you're going to ask them, these same people that you lied to and said 15 years ago, meet this standard, and we'll do that, and we step up, and the industry does it, and then, you know, they know they've got a 20-year payback on that retrofit, and then within 15 years, you tell them, oh, wait a while, we have a new design we want you to go to. So there's no possibility of making money.
I have another question, John. Is the amount of saving of CO2 worth the amount of retrofitting that they have to spend? Because usually when you get up to a point where you are 90 or 95% good, it takes an enormous amount of money to capture that other 5%, and usually it's not worthwhile, because that other 5% doesn't mean anything anyway. So,
well, I mean, and that's the bottom line, Karen. We know today in the fossil fuel industry that everything that they have requested us to do has not impacted 1%, folks, of what they said we would accomplish in reduction of CO2 emissions has not been met. We have not accomplished that goal, meeting their standards. Now, you know, and while we're on the subject of energy, I watched, and I'm sure that everyone that watches the national news has saw in the news the train derailment in Canada and the great devastation, and it looks like there's probably 50 people or more that have been killed and lost. And these tank cars are carrying the oil that would be in a pipeline that has been requested to this executive branch and to the American people, was offered a pipeline to run from Canada all the way down to the ports in Houston, Texas. And we have allowed this administration not to put Americans to work, and it's jobs, it's money, it's an economic boom for Americans. And we've got a president and everyone else in the green agenda that has perpetrated a lie. Those lives that were lost in Canada rest on their head, because we should not, transporting oil in tank cars is not an economically viable deal. We pipeline it. It's far safer for the people that this oil is transported through your communities. A derailment can devastate a community, and now we've got the first evidence on the book, and guess what? Our pipeline that we've been requesting for the last, what, I guess the last 8 years, that the Canadian people have offered this opportunity to the Americans to take this shale oil and bring it down through pipelines rather than transport it by rail. They're going to transport it. They are in the business of making money. And now what will Canada do? And, you know, how, you know, there has to be shame on us. You know,
yes.
And that's shame on the American people for not demanding our government create jobs.
That also goes back to the origination. Who owns the railroad? Well, the sad news is, folks, the railroad is owned by Warren Buffett, who is a good friend of the president. So if he lost his cargo, he'd be losing a boku amount of money. So this has nothing to do with safety of people. It has nothing to do with the environment. It has nothing to do with a quicker transport of oil for cheaper oil. It has to do with the fact that Warren Buffett is a friend of the president and that he owns the railroad that transports the oil. So unfortunately, this accident is on his head. But that's really the root of the problem. This administration could care less about the people. They are only interested in what they can steal and get from themselves and do for themselves. And it is a good old boys club of a hand swap. You wash my back, I'll wash yours. And therefore, if you are my bud and you support my administration, well, I'm going to make sure that you stay in business. And that's what this pipeline is all about. It has, as John said, it's just like fracking. It's just the same thing. It's one great big lie to say that there's a problem when there is no problem at all because of political means. And here we have a president, a sitting president, who is closing and furloughing the military, closing and furloughing other businesses, and sending $7 billion to Africa. Where is he getting $7 billion from? Oh, I know that we're going to print it and send it. But why are we not spending $7 billion in America? Our roads are falling down. We know why, because they don't want them to be rebuilt. They want us all to be sitting on these trains or buses. Our bridges need to be repaired. If we want to do the only job that our government should be doing, which is protecting us, and why is the $7 billion not being used for the border? Here we are, they're screaming, there's no money for the border, no money for the border. Where is the $7 billion coming from? Why are we sending $7 billion to South Africa to help these people develop oil and coal and green programs, probably more failed green programs, but to develop these programs, and here at home, we now have more people on welfare than working. And that's a really hard one. Think back in history for everybody that's listening. Go back, way back in history. Go to the Roman Empire and look at the last years of the Roman Empire. How did the empire fall? Well, the empire fell because they allowed the borders to be open. Isn't that amazing? And their citizens were not productive. So they had slaves to do the work, the citizens did nothing except work if they wanted to, they taxed the rich, and all they would do is say, you're rich, John, you can afford it, so we're going to take 3/4 of your money, period, you have no choice. That's what they were doing. And what did that create? That created the fall of one of the greatest empires in the world. And I certainly don't want to be on the coattails of that story. But that's
that's the bottom line, Karen, and that's what we have to, every week we have to make that statement that we are in decline by design. This is not something, I'm writing some documents and I've gone back and You know, there are principles that our founding fathers created, are documents that create a way and a path back to who we are as Americans. Our Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, captured these principles, and they were sound principles of sound government, a government to where a Republican form of government, and not the Republican Party, but a Republican form of government where the
little
people...
The little R, John. We call it the little R Republican.
Yeah, there you
what?
Go. Where,
hey
where the people were in charge. Yes,
Sally. You got excuse me. You got Ms. Texas out there. She's been hanging on, and I'm sure she's got a few thoughts on this one. And it looks like your special guest is out there too. So where would you like to start?
Well, let's Mike, if you don't mind, we'll be with you in a minute, and we'll take a question because it probably references what we were talking about. And then I want to introduce Mike and bring him in.
Okay.
Hi,
y'all. Ms. Texas, you're on.
Ms. Texas, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you doing? Y'all are doing a great job.
Oh,
thank you.
As I'm down here right smack dab in the middle of all this fracking stuff. It could sound tacky if I wanted it to, but I won't. Did y'all hear that last week that the company that owns the fracking that's going on down in the valley right now or down the road from me, that they sold out part of their business to Venezuela?
Well, I mean,
no,
you know, let me
not.
Tell you something, and that's what the people of South Texas need to become keenly aware of. It's not only Venezuela, but the Chinese government. And these oil companies and gas companies have decided to, you know, they go out and they lease from you. You're an American, and you know you're hoping to prosper, and you give your lease to them. And say I'm just going to throw a name out. Say it's Chesapeake. Chesapeake comes in and they lease your property for the production of oil and gas, and you think, well, this is a great thing. But then Chesapeake turns around and they sell that shell company to a Chinese company. It's not going to be Chinese in any. You're not going to see it until you go back into the corporation and you find out, and you have to pull the corporate documents, and then you find out that your land is actually held by the Chinese government.
Exactly.
And it's a shell corporation, and that's exactly what the same thing with Venezuela. Now, it's not by happenstance that this has been occurring. Because we've allowed it to take place in the Gulf of Mexico, and we think about the oil production in the United States and what the Gulf of Mexico means to us, and we look at the people that are out there drilling, and you go and you find if you can find 10% of the companies to be American-based companies, then you might, you know, I think that's a pretty accurate number. So then you got 90% of the companies that have foreign interest. And they are in Houston, Texas, and Dallas, New York, and they've got big corporate offices. But the bottom line is that, yep, they're employing Americans, and we've got Americans out there doing the work, but we've also got a lot of foreign nationals, and we're doing great work, and we're doing what we think is best to supply energy to a nation that needs it. But then the bottom line is that when they take these dollars and they start to produce profit, how many of those dollars leave America, and then we're not holding them to any accountability for that? Because, you know, if they're taking our natural resources and we allow a foreign entity to come in and produce oil and gas out of our – those are our resources, American resources. They produce them, and then they send 25% of their profits back to their home nation. I don't care if it's England. I don't care where it is. I Venezuela. I don't care who it is. That is American money. Those are American dollars that should be held in America. But we've made it so hard for American corporations to operate that they don't operate under the same standards. And that's the thing that is a shamble and is a shame on us, is that we're allowing these foreign nationals to come in and get by on a cheaper, they could drill cheaper than an American company, because an American company has got to meet all the standards that these foreign nationals do not have to meet.
And
exactly.
I would imagine,
and you're so much more, you know so much more about this. All I know is from the outside what I'm hearing, having worked in the area before, I worked for a company called Aramco. You ever heard of them?
Yes, ma'am.
Well, I worked for a company named Aramco. I was subcontracted to them. At the time, I was young and stupid, and I'm going to say it just like a lot of the kids we've got today, they don't know what's going on. And I was young and stupid and thought I was doing the best thing in the world by working for this big, huge oil company out of Saudi Arabia. But I did not understand that these were Arab countries using our people to do the work and the drilling and everything else they had to do. And then we're turning around and paying them for the damn oil.
Yes, ma'am.
Right. And you know
And here's the thing. Not only are we're buying our own resources from ourselves.
Right.
That's
what I was going to say.
It's ridiculous because, and I hate to say it, but, I mean, in order for me to work and to be able to have a job in the Gulf of Mexico, I have to work for foreign nationals. That's just the way it is. If I don't work for a foreign company, I'm not going to work. At one time, I did work for Exxon, and it was a mistake to leave them. But still in all, the company that I work for, I love everybody that I work with, and they do great work. They're a safe company, safe operator. They do things right. They do it as probably better than anybody else in the Gulf of Mexico. But I still know that there are dollars. They're taking our American resources, selling it to us, and then they can take whatever percentage of their profits that they choose and send back to their home nation.
We have Mike Shaw on the line with us. He's joining us today. And Mike, I know you concentrate a lot on land. Welcome, Mike. And I know this might be a little bit off of what you usually do, but Mike is in California. And I would imagine that the experience of foreign workers in California has been devastating. Would I be correct to say that?
Well, you know, the world is globalizing, and California is set as the example for the rest of the country. As they've always said, as California goes, so goes the country. And if people want to see where we're headed, take a trip to California, because California is not in good shape. It's great to be with you, Karen. I go by Michael. I get confused.
I wanted to introduce you to, this is Mike Shaw.
Michael Shaw.
And John Estabrooks, and we have on the line from Texas, one of our listeners. But Michael, I had asked, please tell everyone your website. Before we go any further, folks, let me give a proper introduction. Michael is, to me, one of the most foremost experts on Agenda 21. He has been fighting this fight for a very long time. He's in the middle of California, and we have learned so much from your mistakes. I have to tell you that. But it is wonderful to be working and to be working with you. And I want to thank you on behalf of all of the Americans for the work that you guys are doing in California. And I know it is a thankless task.
Well, thank you, Karen. It is a longstanding concern. We discovered Agenda 21 back in the year 2000. And we had been, you know, scrambling over the land use issues here in Santa Cruz County, which is a prototype county for the Agenda 21 introduction on a national basis. And you know, I think we've had some effect in, you know, diverting the process locally. But notwithstanding that, you get a win in a year, but 3 or 4 years later, they just proceed with an administrative adoption of their original proposal, even though the public was against it. And that's the pattern of how the federal invasion into local communities with the Agenda 21 plan works. And where you are in Florida, I think you're in South Florida, are you not?
Actually, I was. I'm up in North Florida. But
okay.
South
well,
Florida is exactly like what you're talking about.
Sure. They've got the 750 plan. That's spelling out the word seven and then a 50 behind it, meaning seven counties, 50 years. A program really to create a mega region. We're going to talk about regions today because that's the important political concept behind Agenda 21, behind the globalization process, and behind one world order. And if we don't stop these regionalization or mega region creations that are happening all over America, you know, probably led by the current program in the San Francisco Bay Area. That's the most egregious program that I think we've seen anywhere. Then, you know, if we don't wake up to it and halt it, then our children and, in fact, ourselves will be living in a world where we are considered by our government as nothing more than chattel, as Agenda 21 continues its operation and, you know, to include the massive reduction of human population that is called for in the written documents of Agenda 21. So it's really important that people know.
Michael, would you define a region for our listeners so that they understand exactly what you're talking about?
Well, a region is an area defined without a political boundary. So, you know, for instance, in the San Francisco Bay Area, the region is defined as the seven counties that border the San Francisco Bay. And the idea is that local government is to be replaced in America by regional government. Charlotte Isaby writes that regional government is communism. Now, what I would say about regionalism is that it is a system of unelected councils that create an overriding set of rules that must be followed. And the way regionalism gets its teeth into the American politic is that the federal government, who is the mastermind behind the domestic implementation of Agenda 21, the federal government back in the 1950s under Dwight Eisenhower established a system of what's called councils of government. And what a council of government is an aggregation of local governments that are then incorporated into a regional COG, Council of Government, or COG, is what results and exists across the country. Well, nobody paid attention to these COGs for decades. They were used primarily in the early days to coordinate freeway creations. But what has happened over the decades is that the Council of Governments now control every dime of distributions out to local governments from the federal government. And all of these distributions come with strings attached. And those strings attached are the implementation of Agenda 21. And what that means is that we are to live differently. And we'll talk about that in the course of this show. And I think your listeners probably have a pretty good idea of the stack and pack housing implications of Agenda 21 or the denuded wildlands of proposals across the country. And when I say denuded, I mean denuded of human beings. And so when we begin to see all of the interconnecting facets of Agenda 21, you know, foreign control of this and foreign control of that and national control over local operations and local decision-making and all the funds necessary to implement this coming through these COGs or councils of government. And so that's a rather scattered answer to your question about what regionalism is, but it's the COGs that establish these regions, and these regions are to reset the nature of American life. And when these regions are created, the San Francisco Bay Area region, for instance, one of the top leaders and commentators of the San Francisco Bay Area, One Bay Area program, says that we have already established our goal of creating the San Francisco Bay Area as a city-state. A city-state doesn't report to Sacramento, says this man, Paul Sasso, but
That's
reports
right.
on an international basis to achieve international objectives. Now, that's what's
that
going to be
right
happening.
That's right out of the communist Russian playbook. That's what
well,
they had in communist Russia. They started with the city-states, And each person, in order, if I wanted to go visit you, I had to get permission from my government to go there. And it was almost like each one of these areas was its own entity, connected, I guess, not by county boundaries, but just by made-up boundaries for an issue. So that would be the description?
Well, I think it's the old Russian Soviet system on steroids.
Their
Soviet system never worked as effectively as the system of cogs or the regionalization of America is happening. And, of course, one of the reasons why we're more successful than the Russians in establishing the Soviet ideal is that the monetary system today is far more effective and far more controlled and far more centralized than it was a century ago when the Russians attempted this experiment. And so today, when the money just gets flooded off printing presses and into the federal agents' hands at an unlimited pace, they can hand out grant money to the Florida 750 plan so that these programs can get implemented. And in the San Francisco Bay Area, the One Bay Area plan has a commitment of more than a quarter of a trillion, that's with a T, $1 trillion to the implementation of the One Bay Area plan. Now, that comes out of the pockets of every American.
Money
is going to completely remake the San Francisco Bay Area. And in the process, the nine counties that are involved will be merged.
Right,
They'll disappear. Most of the cities will be merged into the bigger cities. So the 101 cities in the Bay Area is going to shrink way down. And things like a program that connects San Jose to San Francisco along what's called the El Camino Real, a very famous original route here in California, is to be converted into what's called the Grand Boulevard. And the Grand Boulevard will be a mixture of stack-and-pack housing and jobs so that people don't need cars. They walk to their jobs, and no cars will be allowed on the El Camino Real, no private cars anyway, only public cars. And, people just need to be prepared that from behind the scenes and through unelected bureaucrats, our country is today undergoing massive change. I've been talking about Agenda 21 for nearly 15 years, but it's only in the last year or so I could say that, I'm not talking any longer about what's coming. Now we talk about what's happening, because it is.
And it's happening nationwide. That's the thing, Michael. I don't think that there's a state in the union that is not confronting these issues. I know here in Louisiana, I see it moving forward all the time, and it hasn't mattered what administration you have as far as the governor and our Congress and our Senate in Louisiana. We have a Republican governor, a Republican Senate, a Republican Congress, and they are still moving forward with regionalization here. It's a huge push, and it's going to happen. I don't see, because they actually removed the power and the voice of the people. There is no vote given to any of the parishes, of which is our counties. We're not getting a vote and a voice on any of this regionalization that's taking place. It's all being done by bureaucrats, just like you stated.
Well, I'm not going to concede the defeat at this point.
Oh no!
I can tell you that in the Bay Area, word has begun to leak out. No newspaper will talk about the One Bay Area program. Most of the newspapers in the Bay Area are owned by Bill Gates, so it's no wonder that the newspapers don't talk about it. But the people are figuring it out. And at each of these ABAG, that's our COG, or Council of Government, the regional governing apparatus that nobody knows about. They've been operating here since Ronald Reagan was governor. He brought the Voluntary Association of COGs to the state of California. And nobody knew about them. Nobody ever attended their meetings, et cetera. Well, as this One Bay Area program begins to roll out, and they have to have their little public seances in every county, hordes of folks have shown up in opposition, in uniform opposition to the One Bay Area program. And notwithstanding the mounting opposition, many of it based on concerns about Agenda 21, the One Bay Area program is set for adoption next week. They don't care what the people say. There's no vote. You know, not that there ought to be a vote on whether or not people's property can be stolen. But what happens is that it just gets adopted, and it will be implemented with this $250 billion of all Americans' money to remake the San Francisco Bay Area. And as that proceeds, you're going to see it happen in Los Angeles and San Diego in combination with Tijuana, Mexico, because, again, they have no regard for borders. This is about regionalization. Regionalization is about creating world government. If American people sit back, you just got to figure that America's over.
You're right. You're right. Okay, so what can we do? Because knowing about it, we've now got to do something about it. And are you seeing, like you said, more and more people are showing up? So that's a good thing. So
well, that's a
learning.
Good thing. You know, that's a good thing for the people. But you know, there's 7.5 million people in these 101 cities. So you know, nowhere near a percentage of those folks, you know, have even know that it's happening. So there's a lot of education and information that needs to be spread. And you know, if you're in the Appalachians, people need to know about the Blue Ways program there.
That was what I wanted to talk about next, because that's not just in the Appalachians. That's like, well, okay,
it goes
all the way from
everywhere.
Maine to Florida. Different names.
Yes.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Yes. Well, that's a program primarily that's intending to implement the Wildlands Project. Maybe we ought to step back for those listeners that aren't too familiar with Agenda 21 and just give that a brief overview so that you can see the framework in which all of this gnarling, swirling, buzzing activity is taking place and what it's being implemented, why it's being implemented. So should we do that first?
That would be great, yes.
Okay, well, I could talk for 3 days straight on what Agenda 21 is.
And you're wonderful, and we really appreciate it, and we could listen to you all time.
Well, but let me try to get it down to a few minutes. Agenda 21 has three objectives. It's represented in their literature as the three E's. And these objectives include the abolition of private property. You know, you say that, and somebody who's new to this says, well, that's silly. I mean, you know, in America,
America,
we value private property. Yeah, that's not going to happen. But I can tell you without equivocation that on a piece-by-piece basis, the abolition of private property is happening. If you're a rancher in America, you know, there are many fewer today than there was 20 years ago. That's because these folks are being forced out. And those that aren't forced out are being subjected to conservation easements. All of them are being subjected to massive regulatory dynamics that leave us without being able to tap our resources. Instead, those resources are being pledged to China as part of the American debt. And the American landowner finds his hands tied, and eventually he loses the property to the Nature Conservancy or the Department of Interior, you know, or one or another of the globalist land agencies. So the first objective is the abolition of private property. The second objective is education for global citizenship. So any listener out there with a child in public schools, you just need to know that what your child is not learning are the principles upon which the American experiment was founded. Instead, he's learning how to be a global citizen. He's learning how to be green. He's learning the evils of private property, and he's learning the evils of America. He's not learning about the great promise that America is. So the educational process, we all look at our schools and we say, our schools are failing, the kids aren't performing well, they're not coming out right. Well, there's a reason for that. And the reason is the schools are performing. They're performing exactly the way the Federal Department of Education wants them to work. They are creating global citizens out of our youth. And, you know, that makes me take a side trip here a little bit. You know, many of the people fighting against the One Bay Area program are coming in from organizations that say, oh, don't talk about Agenda 21. We just want this One Bay Area plan to start all over. You know, we want to cooperate, but we just want a different plan. In other words, we have too many low-income housing units being dedicated to our community, and so we want to abandon this plan and start all over. But you see, the strategy of the globalists is to say, well, let the older generation work on saving private property. We've got the younger generation. They don't know what private property is, and they could care less about it. What I say is that we've got to educate our youngsters about the nature of private property, how private property begins with the person. My hands are my private property. My mind is my private property. And my private property includes my relationship with something, whether it's land or a car or a house. You know, it's the nature of private property is the owner's ability to determine its use. And what the globalists want is all property in their hands, and the rest of us are mere chattel to serve their interests. And that's why we've got to fight Agenda 21.
Right, and that's why, if I could regress for 1 second, when I tell people with education, they're not fighting the right battle, because it doesn't matter what the choice is if the only choice is communism. And it's been going on for years, and they never look at the content of the material and the method the way the kids are being trained. So they're training little pets how to be good little communists or globalists, but they're certainly not teaching them how to do anything.
Nor are they teaching the principles of, you know, the philosophical nature of the American dynamic, which as George Washington said, you know, freedom and private property are inseparable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't have you don't have private property, how can you have a right to speak freely? Because if you don't, if you speak freely, you don't have a right to private property, but you happen to have something in your pocket, you're going to lose it.
Yeah.
If they don't like what you said.
I think our founders, you know, when I look back and I've done quite a bit of reading on Thomas Jefferson and his writing, and when we read in our Declaration of Independence that we have the right to freedom and liberty and the pursuit of happiness, the pursuit of happiness is private property. And that's what separated this Republican form of government from all other governments in existence prior to, was that the American people were allowed to pursue. The pursuit of happiness was their right to pursue and to have ownership of private property. As long as they did no harm to anyone else, they could do and achieve whatever it was that their mind could perceive. That was the American dream. That's what separated us from every other. That's what made us the greatest nation on the planet.
Well, I think that's right. But, you know, that whole notion has been progressively treated away.
It's
hidden.
We have no fact-based history. We are not teaching our children what an American is or what it means to be an American, how can a child miss a freedom if they've never even been exposed to what that freedom is? You know, how do they understand liberty if they've never seen it or witnessed it? Because we've allowed it to be chipped away at, and that's what this is. It has been a 100-year process to lead us to where we're at, and the education process, these children are not being educated, they're being indoctrinated.
Yeah,
and it's an indoctrination process.
Yes, they're being trained. They're not being educated. They're being stimulus response, stimulus response. I say jump, you say how high, or you jump. There's no thought.
Well, and they're not being tested either.
They're being
assessed for their values
and their
capacity for joining the globalist workforce. And that workforce, I'll say, is not really a communist model. It's much more a fascist model because it's, you know, this world order is doing exactly what my seventh grade teacher in 1961 or 62 warned our class of, and that was that she said, you know, while communism is a threat for the people who are subjected to it, she said, the real threat to the world, to the people of the world, will be when a global government arises that incorporates the principles, the judicial principles of communism with the economic principles of fascism. And, of course,
absolutely,
that's exactly what we have today beginning to emerge.
Yeah.
Okay, so the third element, the first was the abolition of private property, the second was education for global citizenship, and the third was the use of technology so that all human action could be monitored and controlled. And I'll defer to Snowden as proof that such a monitoring system is at least in its and beyond its initial stages of development, because we are monitored and controlled, and that control is going to become heavier and heavier as the time moves along, unless the people wake up, realize that this is not a Democrat versus Republican fight, that this is a fight between Americans and the globalists in our midst. It was Nikita Khrushchev who said in 1959, I was a kid in Southern California, he wanted to go to Disneyland that year, and they wouldn't let him in. And so he berated over the TVs. He said, America will fall without a shot being fired.
Yep, I remember that speech.
And here we are today. He went later that year to the UN. He took his shoe off, slammed it on the table, and said the same thing.
Okay.
You know, and I thought he was an old crazy kook. And here today, he looks like he's prophetic.
Yeah. Well, you know, I when I went to school, I was part of all of this happening. And I lived in New York. I was a liberal Democrat. And I was going, I just finished my master's degree in liberal studies, and I was attending the New School, John Dewey's New School for Social Research was training of how to indoctrinate. So had I continued, my job would have been to be a trainer, to train people in the psychology of being able to do this. And that's what they're doing now. What I'm realizing now is they're not going to be using the teachers anymore. They're going to be using the computers, and they don't need teachers, which is why the teachers are going to be on their way out, and the new teacher is trained for 5 weeks in, what is that thing that he has, some organizing for America. They train the teachers for 5 weeks. How can you train a teacher for 5 weeks? Because the teacher is only going to be the monitor watching the computer.
Exactly.
Well, let's just hope that, you know, enough Americans wake up and keep their children out of that system. Because today, you know, it looks bleaker and bleaker as we take a view of younger and younger age groups. And the acceleration of this academic pursuit for world citizenship is continuing to mount. You know, there were polls taken, I think it was in the year 2010, of high school graduates of that year and college graduates from that year. And it turns out that a majority of them did not see themselves as Americans. They saw themselves as global citizens. So one could say that from that perspective, the educational system is working. It's just working to the destruction of all of us.
Yes, and that's so important for people to understand that. That is the real message. They're making America disappear. And the thing that I realized was they thought that my generation would be gone already, because we're in our 60s and 70s, and I don't think when they did this they realized we'd be living longer. So there's still too many of us left, like us, that can say, yo, wait a minute, this is not going to happen. And we'll turn around and work with the other people and teach them. why it's not going to happen.
Well, if I had any criticism of how the movement has developed, it has developed with too little focus on the young people. And while there are some great contributors out there around the country, I think of people in Austin, Texas, who are young and who understand this stuff. But generally, you go to college campuses, and you know this word is forbidden. I mean, a person like me simply does not find themselves on college campuses, not because I wouldn't go there, but because school administrators don't allow this message, because this is the message, the sustainability message, which is synonymous with Agenda 21, is a core element, not just of land-grant state universities, but of virtually all collegiate efforts in America today.
Yeah, it is so scary when you talk to the kids, and I was telling someone, I went and did a class, and we were talking, and at the end of the conversation, we were talking about the presidents, and I don't quite remember, but at the end of the lecture conversation, I asked them a question, and one of the girls in the class raised her hand, and she said, "I don't know how to answer that question." And I said, "Okay, we were here for the last hour. We were talking about these presidents, and all I did was ask you blah, blah, blah. I don't understand why you can't answer the question." And she said, "No, you don't understand. You didn't give me a choice of four, so I don't know how to answer the question."
Well,
that is your government chooses your destiny for you. That's what that is.
Yeah.
So now... we talk
I know, you know, Michael, I mean, I'm in total agreement with you that, you know, we have failed in this movement. And I guess that's one of the things that any time that I get to speak to folks inside the movement, and I really kind of deplore it now, because you're most of the time speaking to the choir, because we are not bringing in the youth, and it's an absolute necessity. And I relate to folks that, you know, we've given this nation up over the last century, and we've allowed this to take place. And now that we've become enlightened and we are standing in protest, and I go to these groups and we're all in the same age group, and we have not brought these youth into the movement. And when I ask these local leaders of the Tea Party and the Patriot movements that I get to speak at, "Where are your youth?" Because that's one of the things I always do, is have the young people, if there are any present, to make the point so that it's very visible, as I ask people to stand up. Well, if you were educated prior to 1965, stand up, and then that's 90% of the room, most of the time 95% of the room. And then there are children there that their grandparent or their parent has brought with them. But then when you make it a point to seek them out afterward and ask the question, to the American youth now, how do we fight this and battle this, and how do we get youth involved? And it's a perplexing question.
Well, the reality is, though, that if you're 20 years old, the effects of Agenda 21, sustainable development, are going to be most profound on the lives of those people.
Yes.
They're the ones that are going to be made into chattel. They're the ones that are going to be culled.
Yep.
They're the ones with everything on the line. And these are our children, or in some cases our grandchildren. And that's our duty for our lifetime at this point, is to make sure that our offspring understand what's at risk. Now, we don't have to scare them, but the reality is, you know, you give them some sense of history and how, you know, human beings are often likely to interact with each other, and that without a legitimate government controlling that kind of activity and substituting it with a government that pursues that kind of activity, and that's where we're headed today. I mean, we've got a government that isn't an American government. We've got a government that imposes regionalism, which is totally extra constitutional. That means there's no authority for regional government in America.
Not at all.
And these are the things that the young people have to understand. These are the things that mom and dad need to understand will never be exposed at any college or university in this country. It will not be exposed. That message is not allowed. It's been known for generations that academia was a scary threat to the future of humanity. And today we're at that point. The threat is now realized. The schools are fully indoctrinating the children or the young people for global citizenship. And that's at their own demise that global citizenship come to take place. So let me describe Agenda 21 with one of the symbols that they use, because that can give people who don't have a strong hold on what Agenda 21 is by virtue of studying this little illustration that crops up.
Before you do that, Michael, we need a quick station break. This is American Freedom Watch Radio. You are listening live on blogtalkradio.com, American Statesman, and on redstatetalkradio.com. We thank you for joining us. This is Karen Schoen with my co-host, John Estabrooks, and our guest, Michael Shaw. Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, okay. That
sorry.
Was quick.
We had to do a quick break there.
Well, this little symbol that can be used to describe what Agenda 21 is something called the three E's. And mm-hmm. what the symbol is are three interconnected circles. And each one of those circles is filled with one of these three E words. Now, the first word is equity. And by equity, they mean the reconstitution of the American justice system, converting it from one of equal justice, you know, described in our Declaration of Independence, where the same rules apply to everybody, okay, and equal justice recognizes that there's a higher law than civil law or man's law, and that higher law is called natural law, which was well described by John Locke and, you know, and Thomas Aquinas before that. And the idea of natural law is that we have certain rights that are immutable, that are simply inherent to the nature of being human. And those in a nutshell are described as the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to the use and enjoyment of one's property. Well, Agenda 21 substitutes the idea of equal justice with this term everybody hears about, that law schools teach, that kids in school are made to think is the rule of America, and that is the idea of social justice. And what social justice is the idea that different rules apply to different groups of people. So, in today's environment, it means that if you're a woman, if you're a minority, if you're an indigenous person, you're entitled to certain rights that white men might not be entitled to. And the idea is that all rights are mutable, meaning they can change as government's objectives change. And we're sucking our society, and in particular our youth, into this idea of being a champion of social justice. Very, very dangerous.
Woof.
Yeah.
Now, the second E is called economy. And by economy, there are two principles that they're pointing to. The first principle of economy is the creation of public-private partnerships in substitution for free enterprise. Yeah. And by public-private partnership, what they mean is the public is government, and private means somebody who's willing to do the government's busy work. You know, for instance, real estate developers in the San Francisco Bay Area have to be a public-private partnership, otherwise you get no permits. Now, the only way you get permits is to build stack-and-pack Agenda 21 housing. So what we have is a conversion of the system of free enterprise based upon private property to a system of public-private partnership, which is just a fancy term for economic fascism. Benito Mussolini called it corporatism. So that's the part of this second E, the economy. The other part of economy means the redistribution of American assets around the world. And boy, is that happening.
Oh, boy.
You know, and I mean, we find foreign interests, you know, everywhere these days, inside and outside America. And we find multinational corporations without any national allegiance who are really the engine behind creating this global governance dynamic. And our government does nothing to curtail any of this. In fact, our government is the reason these conditions exist. Now, the third E on this little diagram is the environment. Oh. That's what gets everybody accepting this stuff. Oh, we've got to, you know, save the forest.
Save the planet.
But, you know, we're not saving the forest. You know, what we're doing is creating conditions where when the forest catches fire, it destroys the forest. And that's because we're not managing it. So when fires come, it burns so hot it destroys the soil. And it just burns on and on.
Stop for 1 second. I just have one question.
Yes.
Okay. The environmentalists have stopped the clearing of the underbrush and the controlled burns. Is that what has happened? So the
that's the management part of it.
The areas are, because this came up with the blue ways in Missouri. They were talking about the, you know, when the people own the land, they take care of it.
Right.
They'll clear the brush. They'll make sure that, you know, whatever precautions they have to take, they'll take, because they're timberland. That's what they need. But when the environmentalists take care of it, they don't take care of it. They don't let humans there. They don't let anybody on it. So the underbrush grows and gets brittle, and nobody takes care of it.
And then when the fires come, they get real hot.
Okay, now, next thing from that, what goes up in the air when that happens? Carbon dioxide. So one of these fires puts out more carbon dioxide in one day than we could put out in years.
Yeah, but, you know, I don't tend to focus on that issue, that aspect of the issue, because the whole carbon dioxide discussion is nonsense.
Of course it is. But this
you know,
show
so the
that
fact
it's
that
nonsense.
I think what you're showing is they're inherently inconsistent.
Fraudulent.
Yeah, it's fraudulent. It's more than inconsistent, it's fraudulent. The real purpose of the environmental movement is to put nature above man. You know, that's the only consistent ingredient you can find in the environmental movement. Nature is more important than man, therefore nature has to be protected against man. And that's why we need fewer human beings. That's their argument.
Right, and then I usually, after that comment, I usually say, okay. So I went home and I asked my cat to make me dinner because we're equal. And that didn't happen. So how does that make sense?
It doesn't make sense to our way of thinking. But if you're anti-human, if you're demonically directed, it makes perfect sense.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it doesn't make sense that our children should go to school so they can be assessed. But if you're an advocate for global governance, you want to know who those kids are, because some are going to be compliant and others aren't, and you want to know that before they get too old.
Inventory them early on.
It's to inventory them, you know. And it makes no sense to abolish the idea of private property. I mean, that's where freedom stems from, and that's where progress results from. But if you are a totalitarian,
mm-hmm.
And I'm saying we have totalitarians and their agents in the control of our business, political, and academic systems today. If you are a globalist, the idea of prosperity is irrelevant. The idea of control is what is at center.
Well,
and this whole program works to implement the control necessary to bring about an effective global governance.
Right. Money, power, control. That's what all this is about. Nothing else. Okay, this is good. Okay, sorry to interrupt.
Well, so I think with those two analyses, the 3E analysis and the three principles behind Agenda 21, someone who had a general idea of what Agenda 21 is can use those two criteria to begin to really build an understanding. Just knowing that's not enough, because it's how do these programs get implemented? Where did they come from? And then, of course, what is it we do in order to mitigate their effects and reverse the situation and restore America? That's the biggest challenge human beings have faced, I think, in all of human history. But it's a challenge we can't shrink from, because if we do, freedom is lost for a long time, maybe forever. And the nature of human existence is likely to be transformed, because they'll use that technological element of Agenda 21 to create transhumans.
Yep. Yes. I can see that coming. I don't think that'll be in our lifetime, but I can see that coming.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how long you work to live. things are moving very fast
right now. Genetically modified.
Yeah.
We'll wind up being genetically modified. This is one of the things that I've been working on, because my generation created them. And being part of that, you have a different understanding of it because you know how they did it. And now turning around to the new generation, the hardest part and why the Tea Parties are the older people is they can't communicate anymore, because they've taken away the communication. They changed the words. So what we thought was sustainable, so to speak, to them is not. It's a different word. What we thought one word meant, they changed the definition. So they make it difficult for people to talk to each other. And, of course, now all the kids have is an app. So talking becomes irrelevant.
Well, and Karen, it's part of the training in... Part of the training in the indoctrination process that they've used is to tell children that your parents and your grandparents have an old way of thinking. They are not for progress. They are wanting to hold us back, and they are not wanting us to have a sustainable planet. I mean, they're openly telling our children that. Don't listen to your parents. Your parents have an old way of thinking, so they are making us irrelevant to our own children.
Well, and what I have to ask of everybody who's listening out there who have children in school, I just have to ask them, why are you doing that?
Yeah.
Now, I understand that the world order has created a system where, in America, by and large, it takes mom and dad both working in order to pay the mortgage payment.
Absolutely.
I think that's a very sad circumstance. Children belong to their parents, but what we've done, it was the producer, I can't think of his name right now, the producer of the great video, the Hollywood producer who made the movie Rose and then made a great movie about Agenda 21 just before he died. And he was a famous Hollywood producer, and he tells the story about how one of the Rockefellers, was attempting to recruit him as a filmmaker. Aaron Russo, that's who I'm talking about.
Aaron Russo, yeah.
Yeah, to become a filmmaker working for the implementation of the New World Order. And what Russo relates is that the Rockefeller fellow told him, he said, look, our job is nearly complete. We've gotten all the women out of the home,
We've
got all the kids in the schools.
Yep.
And from there, we can control the future.
Yep. Yep. But when I was in school in the 60s, or when learning this, the goal and purpose of school was that the family would be replaced by school, God was to be replaced by government, and the United States was to be replaced by the United Nations. And then I was taught in class.
You're younger than me because I didn't have that kind of exposure.
Yeah, this was in New York, going to John Dewey School. Living near the UN and going to meetings and stuff like that in the UN and things like that.
Oh, my. And the world thinks California is in bad shape. I mean, John Dewey School in New York, that's an all-time low, I'd have to say.
Yes. When I graduated college, my first job, they wanted me to go to Palo Alto. I said, no, I don't think I wanted to do that. And then I wanted to learn more about this. We marched on Washington. What they did was very smart when I was in high school. And they just started the Vietnam draft. They made teaching a draft-exempt profession. And the teachers were the America haters. They were the Jane Fondas. So now they took a whole group of people who were already motivated to hate everybody because they were mad about the war and Martin Luther King and JFK and RFK, and it was just an angry generation. And they said, good, we'll train you to be teachers. And we were the first class that began to learn all of this. And I remember leaving college and walking along the East River with my friend, and I said to him, I will never have children. And he said, why? And I said, because they will grow up to be slaves to communism, and I won't do that.
Yeah.
And here we are. And I never thought that I would live this long, because at that time people were dying when they were in their 50s and 60s.
Well,
and I don't think they thought that we would live this long either. So how do we take and harness now my generation and have them turn around and talk to their children? Because what you said is correct. Why are the parents doing this? Because that's what the parents were taught to do. The parents were taught that the school will take care of it. We'll give them breakfast. We'll give them lunch. We'll give them whatever. You go to work. We'll take care of them. That was the whole transition into the parent. They made the fathers irrelevant through welfare and other programs that made it impossible for people to get involved in an entitlement program if they were married or if both parents lived at home. So they split up the families. The whole feminist movement was to emasculate the men because the men were the providers. And if you took that away, then you would have the breakup of the family, which is exactly what we have.
Well, I think that's right, and I think that the people who've been ordering this society, it certainly includes folks like the Rockefellers and their foundation, have had success, as is illustrated by those comments made to and repeated by Aaron Russo. And it's, you know, the warning bells are out there, and I know it's hard when a family has to have two incomes to support itself. What are you going to do with your children during the day? You know, most parents just say, well, it's practical. As a babysitting dynamic, I pay my taxes, and so now the schools can cover my children. But what I can say is, if you can work out a program for homeschooling.
Yeah.
I've had a handful of children, and I can tell you that, you know, as you move closer and closer to that homeschooling model, you find that it works immeasurably better than sending them off to school at age five.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Keep them home as long as possible because they want them in school from cradle to grave.
Yeah.
If they had their way, they'd never go home. They might go home on a weekend for a couple of hours.
Well, that was the model. That was the Soviet model, and you know, it's slid into this country, and nobody really recognizes that. Nobody calls it for what it is, but we do live in the Soviet states of America.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
You know, with the school system and with the political and economic regionalist program, that is the essence of Sovietized system. It's a centralized control and a top-down authority. That's what happens with federal agencies who are implementing Agenda 21 pursuant to presidential directives, first George Bush Sr. and then Bill Clinton, and every president since then. And these objectives being implemented by federal agencies now control the activities of every state agency and of every county. And so there's no way to escape the reality of the localized Agenda 21 implications that occur in every town in America today. And we talked about a little bit about the Blue Ways programs. We've talked about the 750 program in Florida, the One Bay Area program here in the San Francisco, San Jose area, Oakland area.
I know there's one in Tennessee Valley area, that 17 counties between Tennessee, I think, and what's below Tennessee, Alabama and Georgia.
There's the Texas Triangle. I mean, there is not a place that's not affected massively by Agenda 21, because you lose your federal dollars if you don't go along with these programs, and they usually begin surfacing in transportation programs. It's bicycle lanes and innocuous mm-hmm. things, like seemingly innocuous things like bicycle lanes and reducing freeway lanes from four lanes to two lanes, so you can add a bike lane. You know, in places like Colorado, where, you know, it snows half the year.
Right.
It's just nonsense.
Dying and in the heat. You know, I mean, yes, this is very, very, okay, very serious. Can you explain the Blue Ways program? Because this is water, and they have determined now that water is everybody's right, so they're beginning to tax stormwater runoff. So we have rain taxes and those kinds of things. And they're putting meters on private wells.
I just had a gentleman, and I can't remember what county it was from or what state, but he was just arrested and was taken to jail for collecting rainwater without a permit, and not in when he was told that he had to have a permit.
Yeah, I think that was Oregon.
Yeah, it may have been Oregon. And you know, that's what we're going to see. And people don't realize until you go to do something with your home or your property, and you have to go get granted permission, and you have to get a permit. Well, that is saying you don't control your property. We have control over what you can do and what you can't do with your property. So when people
talk about private
property rights, go try to build something on your property.
That's right. Well, I have a few comments to those comments. First, as to the Blue Ways, I think to understand Blue Ways, one must understand the nature of the Wildlands Project, which is, you know, if we go back to the abolition of private property principle that drives Agenda 21 policy, people would say, well, how do you abolish private property? And in the broad sense, this is the method for the abolition of private property. The nation is divided up into a couple of categories under Agenda 21. And the largest mass of land falls under what's called the wildlands. Now, the wildlands in America constitutes over 50% of the land, and then most of the rest of the land is to be wildland buffers, where limited activities conducted by public-private partners can occur. But let's go back to the wildlands and define what that is. The wildlands are areas that are to be off limits ultimately, not immediately, but ultimately to people, and off limits to any resource extraction. So if you go to the Colorado to the Rocky Mountains, you'll find that if you're in Montana, landowners can't mine their land anymore because they're part of the Wildlands Project. And so that private property, which was acquired for use in creating what it is that everybody in every city needs, okay, the minerals that drive our economy, those are simply off limits.
Yeah.
You know, in Montana, you can't mine anymore, all right, because it's part of the Wildlands Project. Now, the Blue Ways, you know, is all part of that, because what Blue Ways does is it takes a series of rivers, and it says, oh, you can't do anything to the river or the areas surrounding the river, and that means that we're going to control any development of private property. And what we're really doing is creating these wildland set-asides so that before the 21st century is over, meaning Agenda 21, before this century is over, that land will be off limits to human beings.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
you know,
and as a speaker for the energy sector, I can assure you that what we've seen from this executive branch, and not just this executive branch, but by far this has been the harshest when it comes to being able to get permitting for extraction of oil and gas on federally held land, is non-existent under this administration. And those are our natural resources, and there are such an abundance of oil and natural gas that are controlled under federal properties. You know, the expansion that we have right now in our energy sector is all being taken up on private property, and they're finding ways now. You know, you've got these idiots out there expounding the damage that fracking causes, and it's all a farce, but, the big damage is the fact that we can't get onto federally controlled properties. There's no permitting taking place.
Well, that suggests another whole issue, and it's why I would argue that the problems we're facing today are older than simply 100 years ago, certainly older than the generation of baby boomers.
Yeah.
Because this question of federal land ownership is a very intriguing one, and one that nobody asks and nobody answers. The issue is this. If we look at Article 1, Section 8 of the United States Constitution, we find out what the federal authority is. Remember, our founders said the power of government is to be focused first on the individual. I mean, powers. The individual has rights that exceed those powers. And, you know, governance starts in the home. It starts with the family. And then it moves out to the local government. Then it moves out to a lesser level with the state level. And then it moves out to the federal government in a very limited way. There's a listing of what the federal government can do in Article 1, Section 8. And when it comes to land holdings, what the federal government can do is it can own, with permission of the state, basically what it needs in order to maintain a defense. So
yeah.
That means, the federal government can own land to support military bases. But that's about it. There's no authority for the federal government to own forests.
No, it all took. I guess it was the great progressive Teddy Roosevelt that is the daddy of that whole movement to start controlling federal lands and take under the guise of national parks these huge masses of federally held properties, and it's done nothing but continue to expand, and it's expanding in anywhere where there's a national park in any state. You go back and you look at the history over the last 20 years and see just how far they've continued to expand their grasp on that land and how they're robbing people of their private property rights adjacent to those national parks.
Well, that's true, but it predates Theodore Roosevelt. When California became a state, when Nevada became a state, the federal government took 95% of its land as a condition to statehood.
Wow.
Okay. This was back in the 19th century. So these problems are long seated deeply rooted in American history. And yet all of this was done with the vision of putting us right where we are today. And what I say is, states need to begin to rebel. Yep. And that's not going to happen until we elect somebody other than the people we're electing today. Jerry Brown and Arnold Schwarzenegger are not the answer. I had hoped that Tom Scott would be the answer, but I don't see much coming from him. Is his name Tom Scott, your governor in Florida?
Oh, Rick Scott? Yeah,
Rick
we had
Scott.
Hope, but he's not. He's wanting
well, and that's
to
just like,
him.
You know, I hear the
we
Republican Party
also.
Is housing Bobby Jindal, yeah. And Bobby Jindal is bought and paid for. And right now, Louisiana, when you watch this great land grab that they're perpetrating now, and it's been done under this $50 billion plan for coastal restoration.
Right.
And
the
when you look at every
that
all of
the
land that
yep.
this thing is going to, their little yep. project's going to take, it's atrocious. But what's coming to light for the citizens of Louisiana are how many people are going to be displaced. They're just going to take their property and seize it in the name of coastal restoration. And that's Bobby Jindal's day.
Well,
yeah,
you
we
know, the reality
the
is,
thing.
If you want I'm sorry,
we
Karen, go ahead.
Same thing. We have the same thing going here. The Restore Act is doing the same thing. That Restore Act was nothing other than a grant given to the go-ahead for all of these environmental groups to take all of the five states around the Gulf that got money from BP and use it to do exactly what you're saying, to take over the property.
That's it.
Well, it's a dynamic happening everywhere, and it's going to continue until a state stands up and says, federal government, you get out of this state, and we are taking authority and ownership of all federal lands.
Yes.
And if that doesn't happen, we're going to continue to slide down this slippery slope, and the federal government's going to achieve its internationalist goals of subjugating the American people to the policies and agenda of Agenda 21. And that means misery for the next generation.
Oh, yes. Big time misery. Well, you're absolutely right. In Florida, in all the states, we're advocating run for office. People have to run for office. That's been the biggest thing, is not having people run for office because they have it drummed in their head that, oh my goodness, it's so expensive, oh my goodness, this, that, and the other. And that's how this is allowed to happen, because the only people that are in office are chosen by the people that want to do this. So until we have some good people in office, and that's got to start at a local level too.
Well, it absolutely does. I mean, the most important race in America today is what's happening at your school board next election period. You know, it's your city councils, it's your school boards, it's your water boards, it's your fire boards, because, you know, I'll tell you, in California, water boards are completely controlled by the Sierra Club. Now, they're really frustrated because in California, if you can imagine this, America, California and Texas, for that matter, are the two places in the world that have water law that is completely consistent with the concept of private property. And California's water law has frustrated the globalists to no end over the last 20 years. I mean, they've attempted to do everything. And ultimately, when they do these fast grabs on water, it ends up in the California Supreme Court, and the landowners always win. That's because in our law, water, like all assets under the soil, are considered the property of the overlying landowner. In other words, we recognize the Lockean notion that private property isn't just land surface, but it takes a sliver down to the center of the earth, and then it goes up into the sky in an appropriate sphere. And so water under the ground of a California landowner belongs to the landowner. And there are procedures, if the water gets overtapped, to control how much each farmer or each landowner can take out. But the problem in the other 48 states is that the state is in control of the water. And with state governments the way they are today, they're going to use that control to force people out of the rural areas and into the stack and pack metropolitan areas where you can be monitored and controlled 24 hours a day.
Yeah. What happened in the San Joaquin Valley that the farmers couldn't get and can't get water?
Well, in the San Joaquin Valley, much of the valley doesn't have an aquifer, so they rely on surface water. And surface water is a whole different subject. And what happened in the San Joaquin Valley is that most of the surface water comes through or comes from the Delta area, which is, you know, east of San Francisco. And, you know, they had to work to save a minnow from these streams, and so they cut the water supply to the farmers so they could hold this water for the minnows. And so the Central Valley farmers who relied on aquifer water, I mean, not aquifer water, aqueduct water, water coming through the channel built by Pat Brown back in the 1960s, suddenly saw their water allocations dry up, and with that, their farms dried up. You drive down Highway 5 in Central California today, and half the land is simply browned out. And if people don't think that's not going to affect the cost and the quantity of food production for the American people, then they're simply nuts, because California's Central Valley has been the breadbasket for America for five decades now, but it's about to stop.
Yeah. And it's the perfect example of nature over humanity, huh?
That's nature above human beings. And you know, that's consistent with the with one of the Agenda 21 documents. It's called the Global Biodiversity Assessment. It's a 1,150-page document, and in it, it says that if we are to remain industrial, then the world's population must be decreased by 85%.
Yes, I remember reading that. I mean, I saw that.
Well, we have people inside of this administration that have written in full agreement with that statement, and that's scary.
Well, George Bush Sr. signed the document. He was in agreement too. All I would say about Barack Obama is that while he may be the worst president we've seen, he's not as bad as the next one will be.
There you go.
True. And he's really only carrying out the plan that George Bush 41 put in place.
Well, so, you know, and that's the plan that Franklin Roosevelt made his contribution to, and some
they
would argue that Abraham Lincoln did.
I believe they all had their little hand in that one.
Yes.
All except for one, guys. And we have to remember what happened to him. And you know, I always... You know, when we have these conversations, you know, people will say, "Well, you're just a conspiracy theorist," and you know, you. But if there's great YouTube video clip of a speech that John Kennedy gave, I want to say in 1961, about these secret societies and what their goal was. And then we have to think, what happened to John Kennedy, what happened to Robert Kennedy when they started to take on these secret societies and they started to pull back this web of deceit. Because trust me, our president was murdered before our eyes, and we accepted a commission, the Warren Commission's lie. That there was one guy, Lee Harvey Oswald. No, I mean, anyone with any amount of common sense can look at the actions of John Kennedy and Robert Kennedy to expose these secret societies and who they were and to take them to task in the court of law, and then look at the actions and what happened to those two men. So we have had freedom fighters, and we did have a president who had become, you know, he got to see all of the secret documents and everything that was held by these secret societies. They had to get his buy-in, and every president that we elect has to be in agreement with these people, or they will not be elected.
And we don't elect anyone. I mean, I think our presidential elections are all a farce. Until we go to hand counting our ballots again, I'm not going to buy anything that comes out of a computer or a machine. But I just always refer people to go back and check out the YouTube video speech of John Kennedy in 1961. And if that doesn't open your eyes, and it pulls back the whole web of deceit that's been perpetrated on us, and the fact that there was an honest man who attempted to make a change, and he was murdered in the sake of that.
Well, I've seen him speak about the Federal Reserve and the International Monetary Authority, and that was in 1963, just a week before he was shot. As I've grown older,
he finally got the money people, huh?
Yeah.
That was the speech you were talking about. That was the Columbia University.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that was that was just before he was killed. And you're right, John. And look what's going on now. The reporter was just killed. These people were murdered. They murdered 200 scientists who were finding additional evidence that were on their original team about global warming. So scientists are winding up dead. This crowd doesn't, they don't play nice.
No, they don't.
And
no, they have
we
power.
Have to understand that because they've got them. Well, the problem really is right now the power is what's hanging on a thread. They've got the money and they've got the control. It's the people that have the power if we would get together and exercise it. And
well, that's
right.
So let's talk about that now. We've got about 10 minutes left, and I haven't set this up right, so let me try to spin through quickly a little more fact, so that we can talk a little bit about what it is that you can do anywhere you are, because there are things that can be done. The reality is that globalism is now in its final phase. They have internationalized the monetary system. They've internationalized the trade system. They're trying to harmonize the legal system. And all of that are essential elements to the creation of a one world. But what they don't have is they don't have the hearts and minds or the control at the local level. So today what we're seeing is an outreach to the local areas to implement Agenda 21 policies, whether it has to do with transportation, whether it has to do with the implementation of wildland zones, whether it has to do with the creation of human settlements via these stack-and-pack arrangements like what everybody's doing these days. Well, there's an organization that is key to making this happen. It's called ICLEI, the International Council for Local Environmental Initiatives. And so what ICLEI does is it comes in and it gets a contract with your city. And that contract then allows your city to be guided by the ICLEI organization in the creation of statutes and policies and regulations that implement these globalist Agenda 21 objectives. Well, ICLEI has contracts with over 600 cities and counties across the country. ICLEI also is in bed with every COG, Council of Government, that is the regional governing apparatus that is non-constitutional that exists everywhere across America. ICLEI is a huge force in the creation of Agenda 21. Now, ICLEI is an NGO. NGO means non-governmental organization. NGOs are accredited by the United Nations for purposes of implementing Agenda 21. To give you an idea of how expansive this program is that let me name a couple of NGOs for you. There's 10,000 NGOs operating in America today. All the environmental groups are NGOs. Chamber of Commerce is an NGO. The National Real Estate Board is an NGO. American Medical Association and the American Bar Association. You see, we are being globalized by all the organizations that we belong to.
Yeah.
And in many cases we support. Now,
mm-hmm.
ICLEI is an NGO. Their purpose is to evolve the United Nations into the United Cities of the world. Now, if you go to freedomadvocates.org, the top video in the left-hand corner of our website is a video of a man named Paul Saffo speaking at the Joint Venture Silicon Valley Organization's seminar with 1,200 high-tech executives in attendance. And in that speech, he says that the Bay Area, the one Bay Area, is already a city-state, that it doesn't take its directions from Sacramento, but that it sits at an international congress, and those are the objectives that the Bay Area now works toward. The idea of ICLEI is the creation of city-states in America and around the world. It's an organization based in Bonn, Germany, that has absolutely no regard for the American ideals, constitutional or otherwise. Now, Article 4, Section 4 of the U.S. Constitution, I think I've got that right, says that no state or its subdivisions may enter into any treaty, alliance, or confederation with a foreign power.
Mm-hmm.
And that's Article 1, Section 10. I'm
Section
sorry, it's
10.
not 4,
yeah.
4. It's Article 1, Section 10.
Section 10.
Now, I say that when you read Article 1, Section 10, and you look down, you go to the Freedom Advocates primer on misprision of treason, and you'll find the list of all the cities in America that have open contracts with this ICLEI organization. ICLEI is based in Bonn, Germany. Its purpose is to create a world of city-states operating under a international congress. And you tell me that's not a violation of Article 1, Section 10, and I'll say, well, it's just obvious. The constitutional prohibition is clear. The circumstance of what ICLEI is attempting to do and the contractual relationship it has with cities and counties all over this country is obvious. What citizens need to do, what the easy shot is right now, is to find out the closest ICLEI city to you and deliver to those elected officials what's called a misprision of treason. Now, misprision of treason is a statutory authority that exists, I think, in every state. You know, we have the model for California posted on our website. Again, that's freedomadvocates.org. What people need to do is to cause these elected officials who think they have no skin in the game, who think all the risk is ours and none of the risk is theirs, to be delivered a misprision of treason. You say, well, who's gonna serve the indictment? And I say, well, the indictment may not come today. You're going to need a grand jury or a district attorney or a sheriff that's going to take action. But the idea is this. You put on the public record the delivery of a misprision of treason, putting these elected officials on notice that they are violating the Constitution in their relationship with ICLEI. And when this battle takes its ultimate form, and if we win, the first thing people are going to want to do is know who has delivered these misprisions and who's responsible for the chaos that resulted. Now when these guys go to sleep at night, they may not be facing imminent indictment, but they know that the potential is there not only for America to be ruined, but for them to be jailed for treason.
Oh, very, very good. That's excellent. What a fabulous thing. Everyone go to freedomadvocates.org. Michael, thank you so much. This has been fabulous, and you're going to have to come back again.
Well, I'll be glad to do that.
This again. Honestly, we'll try... excuse me, we'll give you a reprieve for a couple of weeks, but we're going to need to have you come back before session starts in Florida and in other places after the summer and go over this misprision of treason, because I like this very, very much. I think this is a wonderful tool for all of us to learn about.
Can I raise my hand?
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't see you. Yes, ma'am.
That's okay. Michael,
fast.
You've been my hero for years. I just realized who you were. This is Doreen Taft from Texas.
Okay.
Where would I go, and I'm going to jump on this Misprisium in a hurry, because I've been trying to convince the idiots here in my little town of ICLEI, and it's here. I know it's here. It's all over their computer system, all over the plans they've got laid out for this city. And where do I go to file this, and with whom?
Well, if you look at the Misprisium of Treason primer at our website,
okay,
I'll give you some examples of I've delivered it to Alameda County, which is the home base for ICLEI. That's the
okay.
city of Oakland. And I've delivered it here in my hometown to my local representative in Santa Cruz. But it will give you examples and information on how and what to do it. But basically, if you're going to go to a city council, you just want to record it with the city clerk. You're going to want to present it to them, be sure it's filmed and gets on community TV so that people begin to sink in their minds that you've got some, you know, some criminals.
This is wonderful, and I'm so sorry, guys. We're going to have to end and say goodnight, but, Michael, please will you come back, and we need to go over this. We need to have a lesson on the Misprision of Treason and how to use it correctly. So I will get with you after the show and see when you can come back.
Okay.
Everyone, freedomadvocates.org. Michael has incredible information. Follow his lawsuit. He needs help. We need money. This is not going to be done all by itself because it's nice. So thank you all for joining us this evening. This is Karen Schoen and John Estabrooks. You're listening to American Freedom Watch Radio. We're brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio, American Statesman, and on RedStateTalkRadio.com. Good night, John.
Good night, John and Karen.
And good night, Michael. And good night, Dory.
Good night.
Good night, all.